The Supreme Court has concluded its current term with a flurry of opinions on immigration, property rights, and tobacco advertising. As NPR's Nina Totenberg reports, the last day was a bit anticlimactic.
All week long, rumors had swirled around Washington that on the final day of the term, there would be a retirement from the bench, maybe even two. But it was clearly not to be. There were, however, ironies aplenty, as when Justice John Paul Stevens, sitting in for the Chief Justice, who was away, announced the resignation of the court martial. Stevens thanked him and the members of the Supreme Court bar, who he noted had worked so diligently to speed a resolution in the Florida election case Bush versus Gore. Stevens, of course, dissented vehemently from that ruling that handed George W. Bush the election. And sitting right in front of him yesterday was the man who had argued the Florida case for Bush, the now Solicitor General of the United States, Ted Olson. The court's rulings yesterday may have been more mundane than the election case, but they will have widespread repercussions. The tobacco case involved a Massachusetts law, replicated in other states, that attempted to eliminate all tobacco advertising that can be seen by children. The law banned any outdoor ad within 1,000 feet of any school or recreation area, as well as any ad or promotion placed inside a store below 5 feet. The regulations were justified, the state said, because even in the aftermath of the massive tobacco industry settlement with the states, the industry was still targeting kids. Yesterday, the Supreme Court, in an opinion written by Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, agreed with the justification, but invalidated the advertising ban because the court said the ban on cigarette ads intruded on ground that Congress, in the Cigarette Advertising and Labeling Act, preserved exclusively for the federal government. The federal law requires warning labels on cigarettes and bans broadcast ads. The rest of the Massachusetts law, said Justice O'Connor, the part not covered by the federal law, is unconstitutional because it's written so broadly that it would mean almost no advertising would be permitted in every major metropolitan area of the state. The state attorney general, Tom Riley, said he was disappointed, but that the states will ask Congress to amend the federal law to allow state regulation.
If Congress will step up and say, no, states are free to do what they historically have done, to take measures to protect their kids, we can get the rest of it done ourselves.
But William Olemeyer, the assistant general counsel of Philip Morris, called the decision a victory for free speech.
Cigarettes are a legal product, and there are adults who fully informed of the risks of smoking, choose to smoke. They should be allowed to read and see and hear truthful and accurate information about those products.
In a second major ruling, the court handed property rights activists a victory when it ruled for the first time that if you buy land knowing there are state restrictions on its development, you may still challenge those restrictions, and if you lose, you may be entitled to compensation by the state for rendering your land unusable. The case was brought by Anthony Palazzolo, who acquired a large area of marshland along a pond in Westerly, Rhode Island, more than 2 decades ago and has been trying to develop it ever since. He knew when he took title in 1978 that the state had adopted health and environmental laws and regulations forbidding filling, dredging, or building on land like his, and sure enough, he was subsequently told by the state he couldn't build on any portion of the land except an upland lot. And so he sued under the provision of the U.S. Constitution that bars the government from taking a person's property without just compensation. The state, he argued, had, through regulation, rendered his land unusable, and though he'd paid just $13,000 for it, the state should pay him the current market value, which he said was over $3 million.
It's really a question of, not really me, but the right to own property and to use it, providing the fact that you do no harm.
The court ruled in principle for Palazzolo that he had the right to sue for compensation, even though he'd been on notice when he acquired the land that it was severely regulated. But in the next breath, Justice Anthony Kennedy, writing for the majority, said that the land had not been rendered valueless since Palazzolo could still build a house on one portion of it. As to whether overall the state had made a partial taking of his land, the court sent that question back to the lower courts with instructions to weigh a large number of factors, including the state's interests, Palazzolo's investment expectations, etc. Both sides in the case claimed victory, but property and land use specialists said the court's ruling is likely to spur speculators into going to court to try to win compensation for property they always knew was unusable. And the experts say some speculators could win because the court's opinion is so confusing. John Echevarria is the director of the Environmental Policy Center at Georgetown Law School.
I think mush is an accurate description. It's both an expansion of takings doctrine and injects new uncertainty into the law.
Eben Moglen, who teaches property law at Columbia, says yesterday's decision will make it difficult for state and local officials to know what they can and cannot do.
The relationship between the federal constitution and state land use rules has been made very complicated by the Supreme Court since the mid-1980s, and the thicket has grown so intense that the justices themselves can no longer find their way around in it.
Finally, yesterday, the Supreme Court, by a 5-4 vote, essentially ordered the release of thousands of immigrants from INS detention. These people have been dubbed lifers because they're being locked up indefinitely for the simple reason that their home countries won't accept them or may no longer even exist. Some have committed serious crimes and served their time. Others have been ordered deported for reasons as minor as visa violations. The two cases before the court yesterday were stark illustrations. In one, the defendant was a petty crook who'd come here at the age of 8 with his parents and was essentially stateless. Born in a relocation camp after World War II, he was a citizen of no country, and when the U.S. tried to deport him, nobody would take him. So he spent the next 6 years in an INS lockup. The other case involved a Cambodian refugee from the Khmer Rouge who came here with his parents at age 2, got involved in a gang killing at age 17, served his time, and then was ordered deported. But Cambodia, like many other countries, has no repatriation agreement with the U.S. and wouldn't take him back. So he, too, was locked up indefinitely until a lower court eventually released him. Since then, Kim Ho Ma has lived at home, supporting his parents by working on an assembly line in an airplane parts plant.
I can work. I pay the taxes. I just want to live the American life.
Yesterday, the Supreme Court said the lower court was right to release Ma. Writing for the court majority, Justice Stephen Breyer said that the indefinite, potentially permanent detention suggested by the government would likely be unconstitutional, especially where, as here, the government claims that it can lock people up without court review. Preventive detention, said Breyer, is only permissible under very tight supervision by the courts and with lots of protections for the person being detained. Here, he noted, there are no such protections, and Congress, he said, has not authorized such a detention. From now on, the court said, the government would not be able to detain people when their deportation cannot be accomplished in the reasonably foreseeable future. And to simplify the matter for the lower courts, the justices set 6 months as the general reasonable limit for detention. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.